Welcome to Talking Supply Chain. In each episode, you'll hear from the authors that make Supply Chain Management Review such a special publication. This podcast is hosted by Bob Troublecock, Editorial Director of Supply Chain Management Review. Remember that Bob welcomes your comments now to today's episode.
Welcome to today's episode of Talking Supply Chain, Breaking Through the Concrete Ceiling. I'm Bob Troublecock, and joining me today are Harry Haney, the Director of the Supply and Value Chain Center at Loyola University Chicago, and Jeffrey Korzenick, Chief Investment Strategist for Fifth Third Bank and the author of Untapped Talent, How Second Chance Hiring Works for Your Business and the Community. That book is about to be published by HarperCollins. So Harry, Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Great. Now, I think everyone agreed that even before COVID, the number one issue facing supply chain organizations was the lack of available talent. COVID has only made it worse. And while it's an issue across the organization, it's particularly acute at the operations level, every position from truck driver to forklift driver. In fact, just a week before we did this recording, the Wall Street Journal ran an article about a dire shortage of associates on the factory floor. They could have just as easily have substituted warehousing or transportation for manufacturing and still been spot on. So, what's a resourceful supply chain manager to do? In my last podcast, my guests explored one untapped talent resource: what it takes to integrate people with disabilities into your operations. Today, Harry and Jeff are going to talk about another untapped resource: second chance hiring, or working with previously incarcerated individuals. A quick note, this was the subject of The Concrete Ceiling, an article from the July 2020 issue of Supply Chain Management Review that was co-authored by Harry, Jeff, and their colleagues. So Jeff, let's start with a couple of baseline questions. We've all heard about the glass ceiling, but in the article, you guys called this the concrete ceiling. Why the concrete ceiling, and what does it mean?
This is a reference in the article to the severe barriers to employment and to economic advancement and career advancement faced by people who are burdened with a criminal record. The reference to the concrete ceiling versus a glass ceiling, I think it's also a reflection of how impenetrable this barrier has been. It's important to understand the numbers we're talking about. 19 million people in the United States have a felony conviction, tragically including one in three Black men in America. And of those, I think it's also worth noting that these are people who are faced with severe restrictions on employment and advancement, but over half of them were not even sentenced to a prison term. Their offenses, while deemed felonies, were of such minor risk to public safety that they didn't even have to serve a prison term. So we at Fifth Third look at this problem, but we also flip it and see an opportunity to meet our labor needs in the future.
You know, when I went through the article that the two of you and your co-authors wrote, it seems like, one, we addressed two big questions, and they certainly were the two questions that came to mind when Harry and I first talked about this. And one is, why should companies consider working with previously incarcerated individuals? I mean, are there benefits to this? Harry, I'll throw that one to you.
Absolutely, Bob. There's a number of benefits to working with these returning citizens. And you mentioned the shortage of labor that exists. And this is a pool, and unfortunately very large, as Jeff mentioned. And what we've seen is that there are studies that show that 82% of managers and 67% of HR professionals believe that the quality of formerly incarcerated individuals is the same or higher as their workers without such a background. The other thing that they have found is that because of the difficulty in getting a job, they value the ones that do get through value that job much more so than many of their peers without those same challenges, and as such become more dedicated, more dependable employees.
I thought that last point when I read the article, I think was one of the most important, you know, particularly in floor level positions, you know, truck drivers, factory workers, warehouse and distribution center workers. It's not uncommon to have 100% turnover. I've had warehouse managers tell me that distribution center down the street raises the price for a nickel. Can you guys hear me? I'm going to pause for 5 seconds. And can you guys hear me now?
Yes, just fine.
Okay, because I lost the connection for a second. So I'm going to start over on that. It's the joys of COVID and Wi-Fi. Thanks, Harry. You know, that last point you made about loyalty, I think, is one of the most important. When I read your article, when I talk to warehouse managers, transportation managers, it's not uncommon for them to experience 100% turnover in their labor force. And I've had both factory managers, warehouse managers tell me that if the place down the road raises the wage by a nickel, you know, they lose employees and then have to replace them. I've had other managers tell me, including a Honda Motors manager, that he's employed some of the same people 4 times during the course of a year because they leave, go somewhere else, and come back. So I think that loyalty point that you made is really important. Jeff, you've literally written the book on what I think is the second big question. So in your experience, what are the barriers or what are the questions that most employers ask or should consider if they're thinking about hiring the previously incarcerated? For instance, what are the potential hazards and liabilities?
I'm going to break that into 2 parts. One, the questions they have to ask, and then the fears they have to address, because those are really separate issues. And also, I'm going to stress that it's not just about people who've been incarcerated. So many people have been touched by the criminal justice system, not just the half of those with felony convictions who didn't serve a prison term, but many people with misdemeanors who saw their employment disrupted, who have a criminal record because of a misdemeanor. So it's a very, very broad group. Estimates of the measures of the groups are as high as 70 million who've been touched by criminal justice. I think that's a little high, but it's a lot of people, and it's not just those incarcerated. The 2 questions that employers have to ask is, one, whether there are any regulatory constraints. What I found in my research and my experience, though, is very often employers overestimate their regulatory barriers. There may be some rules, but not everyone is excluded. And so that is something that has to be investigated and understood. The other is a little bit more subtle, and that is whether they are willing to make the investment to make this work. You can't just dive into this without some thought and some research and an understanding that you need a process to make this work. It is not the same as your traditional hire, where you'll often be encountering people who are very self-sufficient. When you're hiring from this pool, you often have to make some accommodations. It might be allowing time in the workday to meet a parole officer. It might be making sure employees have support in transportation. Often these are things that the employer doesn't have to provide directly, just a matter of understanding, and often partnerships with nonprofits or social service organizations. But it requires an investment of time, sometimes an investment of money. It is worth it. That's what every second chance employer that I have met will tell you and can attest to, but it does require an investment. So employers need to understand that this is not something where you can just turn on the switch. It requires an investment. It's got a high return on its investment, as Harry mentioned. To have highly engaged, highly loyal employees is worth a lot, but you can't get away with not making that investment. In terms of the fears, they basically boil down to 3 categories. One is this combined safety and liability concern. And those tend to be overblown. You as an employer have the right to decide which offenses you find acceptable. It's very common for employers to not be willing to take people who have had crimes against children or against women, and that's absolutely legitimate to do. But very often, the vast majority of crimes are crimes of youth, poor judgment, and being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So employers tell me that while they start out with a whole variety of restrictions, they tend to whittle those back as they gain experience. But you can absolutely control the safety and the liability issue. There are also liability protections you can get. Generally, restoration of rights certificates is the broad term for certificates that are typically granted by the court system that help alleviate some negligent hiring liability concerns of employers. So concern number one, that safety liability is generally overblown and is something that employers can control. There tends to be also concern that these will not be quality employees. And again, if you have the right process in place, as Harry mentioned, you get these really great employees. So I always like to share the story of a second chance employer in Lexington, Kentucky, Deviate Kitchen. And they hire primarily people with a history of addiction. They go to the halfway houses as their talent pool. And when they started, the owner, Rob Perez, shared with me they had difficulty getting customers. And I said, were they concerned about their safety? He said, no, they're concerned over quality. And once all those five-star Yelp reviews started coming in, people came to understand that second chance doesn't mean second rate. And that's something that's been a very consistent message among employers. And then the final one depends a little bit by industry. People worry about the reputation risk. In general, we think manufacturing, logistics, lots of places along the supply chain are great fits for second chance employment because your employees are typically able to earn a good living wage. But they're not customer facing, they're not handling money, and you just don't run into some of the reputation concerns that you have and you see in, say, the hotel industry or even the restaurant industry, which can be successful second chance hirers. So what I would say is there are potential hazards, but if you adopt a risk protection, a risk mitigation approach by being selective in your hiring, partnering with reentry organizations, nonprofits, sometimes prison systems that can tell you who's ready for employment. And then you have more processes in place to provide support, mentoring, understanding, accommodation. You're able to overcome all of these objections.
Jeff, you touched on something in your answer. Jess, I wondered if you can give me a quick example. One of the first hurdles or barriers you mentioned was concern about a regulatory barrier. Now, I'm going to make a bad analogy, but I'm guessing, you know, a bank can't hire a bank robber. But can you give me an example of a regulatory barrier that they might face?
In the banking world is something I'm obviously more familiar with. And it's interesting. I think many people had assumed that you can't hire anyone with a criminal record. But we at Fifth Third supported one of the trade associations in helping relax some of those rules. So, for example, we can't hire a bank robber. That is true. And I think that's a pretty good rule out of respect for our employees. But if someone had a drug conviction of youth or a felony DWI and has and these offenses were many years ago, we could certainly consider them for employment.
Great, thanks. That's a great example. Also, Harry, before we move on, there was something else Jeff touched on in his answer that I think one of your co-authors touched on, which is the idea of, you know, one of the barriers to hiring previously incarcerated people might be their lack of housing or lack of transportation that, you know, might impact their ability to show up reliably for work. Are there social agencies out there that can provide that kind of support to a company that wants to hire previously incarcerated people?
Absolutely. The one that we are probably most familiar with is was a co-author of this, a group called A Safe Haven that's in Chicago. And they work with these individuals to get them the training and skills necessary to be able to get and keep a job. And they've been very successful at it. One of the examples, and this just goes to the point about the level of dedication that you often see in these type of employees, that one of their roles has been to help treat COVID-19 positive individuals. And it was formerly incarcerated individuals who've been the ones to step forward and agree to be patient care assistants, facility maintenance, and other roles that are directly serving patients in isolation. And they're eager for an opportunity to gain the employment and gain the experience. So yes, there are agencies out there that do this kind of work. And we encourage folks that are looking to tap into this labor pool to make sure that they are working with these type of firms.
You know, Bob, I should also...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff. Yeah. I interrupted.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was remiss in not mentioning licensing restrictions. So certain roles require professional licenses, and very often there are what's called moral turpitude clauses that are used to prohibit people with felony convictions, sometimes with misdemeanors, from getting licenses. And sometimes these make sense. You might not want someone with a DWI operating a recent DWI operating a vehicle, but very often they make no sense. In many states, you need a barber's license, and people with felony convictions are restricted from being a barber. Again, if you were Sweeney Todd and you murdered someone with scissors, maybe that makes sense. But these kind of blanket restrictions that are out there are simply overdone. It's state by state, it's industry by industry, but fortunately there's a national reform movement to roll back some of these restrictions and provide reasonable and fair opportunities to people who, yes, made a mistake, but have also done their time.
Actually the barber one was the first one that came to mind when you talked about licensing restrictions. So thank you for that. Harry, when Jeff was giving his answer before, he mentioned, one company that was doing this quite successfully. You just referenced a nonprofit, but also in the article, one of the contributors was from Koch Industries, which apparently has a program like this. Can you share some details from successful, integration of people previously incarcerated in what we would think of as private sector or industrial jobs?
So one of the, and Koch has certainly had, they're very committed to this group of individuals, and have found that these folks are very dedicated. And in fact, on the other side of the coin, have found that sometimes people with the very best resumes actually have turned out to be not so great employees, and have been, in fact, even stolen from them. So I think that you have to watch your assumptions that just because somebody has a sterling record doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be without challenges in your organization. But to answer your question, another example that came up in our research for the article was a firm by the name of Chicago Green Insulation. Now, these are folks that do spray foam insulation into construction locations. Some of it's new construction, some of it is remodeling. And Tom Decker there was telling me about a recent project that they just completed, and the very big deal, and the very demanding client. The client called back and said, "Say, we really appreciate the job that your folks did on this assignment, and we hope we can get them for the next one." Well, the two people that were working on this were returning citizens, and they were successful because of their really super attention to detail and being very sensitive to the customer's requirements in terms of timeliness and cleanup and so on and so forth.
Great, thanks. So Jeff, you've done this. If you were talking to, you know, a colleague or another company that's never done this, how do they get started?
We actually have a series of steps we put together that we suggest employers follow to explore this. If they're ready to go, there's a different, set of steps to take. But most companies want to go slowly, explore this. And we call these initiatives bridging the box. And it starts with understanding that for all I've talked about, the processes you need for risk mitigation and support, that doesn't apply to every single person with a criminal record. There are literally millions of people who have a criminal record who have rebuilt their life successfully. And if someone has been out for 5 or 10 years and gainfully employed, don't treat them any differently than any other employee. There is no need to restrict that resume and that applicant because they have a conviction. They are people who don't need any particular level of support. They're just another applicant and probably someone of whom, as is typically said of people with records who rebuild their lives, has a lot of grit and would be an attractive hire. I think it's also important to do spend a little time educating oneself on what it means to have a felony. Take a look at applicants who are applying with records and understand what some of those crimes actually were. I think there is a natural tendency, and I had it myself before I learned about this, to always assume the worst. You know, people are, were axe murderers or whatever. The reality is a lot of felony convictions are fairly obscure crimes. There's a lawyer in Hartford, Connecticut, Mike Chase, who's written a book about this, but has a Twitter feed called Crime a Day, where he dives into the federal code and puts one absurdity after another out every day of what it can take to get a felony conviction. Someone, there was a case in Florida of a man out with his, I believe his fiance, and he brought balloons and they were setting by the ocean and he released the balloons and he got arrested for an environmental felony. So a felony is not always what you think it is. You really have to look case by case. I think it's also important to find second chance pioneers, talk to other businesses that have done this. There's some in just about every major commercial area in the country. There's someone who is doing this and has been successful. No need to reinvent the wheel. You can learn from their success. Businesses are interested in doing it. I actually invite them to contact me. I have a great national Rolodex and can usually help someone network into a pioneer. And I found most of these pioneers are extraordinarily generous with their time and expertise because they get that it's about making our whole economy better when you have these this potential for improvement. I do recommend that people explore nonprofit partners that they can work with who might be potential pipelines of talent and also provide the support services. Again, they're in every city. Even if you're not ready to hire someone and consider that, take a look at any of your vendor restrictions. One of the things that's been quite tragic out there is the companies who've had a great experience with second chance hiring people with records and find that they are restricted from sending them to certain job sites because those are built into the vendor contracts. Often these contracts are templates that were developed decades ago and no one really understands what's in them and why it should still be there, or better yet, why it should be eliminated. And one final piece that I recommend to employers is to offer amnesty. Very often I've come across individuals who have been productive, contributing members of firms for decades, and yet live in fear that at any time their past criminal record of decades earlier might be uncovered and trip some HR rules in that company and end their careers. That's simply not fair to someone who's been a longtime contributor. So consider offering amnesty to anyone who's been an employee in good standing. I don't know if it's 5 years or 10 years or 3 years. An employer will have to decide for themselves. But those are good intermediate steps to take that will help educate and sensitize employers and get them ready to make that investment you need to make to actually implement a program.
Great, thanks. Last question. I'll put this to both of you. We'll start with Harry. What's the most important message to leave with the listeners about this topic?
Well, Bob, if you look at this, about 1 in 3 adults in this country are stuck with a criminal record. And in many cases, as Jeff mentioned, these are just not something that would be of concern for a for many positions. And disqualifying folks, a third of the population, for in past indiscretions just doesn't make any sense from a moral or an economic perspective. And I think with that in mind, I think you just have to ask yourself, did you ever want a second chance with something?
Jeff, same question to you.
I'm going to take, I absolutely agree with Bob's, with Harry's closing statement. Most of us have not led blameless lives. It's just we haven't been caught. We are, I'm the son and grandson of immigrants. We are the land of second chances in America, and we want that for all of our citizens. On a more practical level, there is a coming talent shortage in the United States. What we saw in 2017, 2018, 2019, in terms of tightness of labor markets, is a preview of the decade and decades ahead. Birth rates in the United States have been declining since the millennial boom peaked in 1990. Those millennials are all in. There's not many births behind them, so labor markets are getting tighter. We continue to lose the baby boomers. The disruptions of the pandemic have probably forced some labor out of the market for good. We are heading for a very, very tight labor market. And there's one nuance on that, wearing my day job hat as an investment professional. I would note that employers got used to not worrying too much about tight labor markets because it usually meant the end of a cycle, the Fed would start to raise interest rates. The Fed has explicitly said that they are now operating under their what they're calling their new monetary policy framework, which is going to lead to prolonged red hot labor markets. So as an employer, you have to get out in front of it. There is a pool of talent here that is waiting to be tapped.
Thanks, Jeff. That's all the time we have today. My thanks to Harry and Jeff for joining me, and thank you for listening. And be sure to check out The Concrete Ceiling on scmr.com to learn more about this topic. I hope you'll be back for our next episode. For Supply Chain Management Review, I'm Bob Troublecock.
Talking Supply Chain is produced by Supply Chain Management Review and Peerless Media. You can find it on scmr.com, on iTunes, or under SC247, or just Google SC247 podcasts. For more information, be sure to visit scmr.com. We hope you'll join us again.